to City Visions. I'm your host, Grace Wan. Among the many joys of the summer is the chance to go on vacation and perhaps even travel abroad. The chance to travel can be a life changer. As Mark Twain once said, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. As you plan your next trip, you may be compiling lists of places to eat, sights to see, but have you ever considered how to travel ethically? In fact, what is ethical travel? My guest tonight, Jeff Greenwald, is a longtime travel journalist and the founder of Ethical Traveler. He's here tonight to explain what ethical travel is. As he notes, tourism is one of the world's most powerful economic engines and can drive the way whole countries treat their citizens, indigenous people, oceans, wildlife, rivers, and forests. Last year alone, the global travel industry generated $8.27 trillion in revenue, and thus even a single tourist has the power to affect change. In that vein, for the last several years, the Ethical Traveler team has compiled an annual list of the top 10 ethical countries to visit. We'll hear tonight about where those countries are and how they were chosen, and you'll pick up some great advice along the way. We hope you'll join us for the conversation when we open the phone lines in 20 minutes. Call us at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can email us at cityvisions@kalw.org or send us a tweet at cityvisionskalw. Have you ever visited one of the countries on this list? What criteria do you think should be considered in evaluating whether a country is an ethical destination? So, Jeff Greenwald, welcome to City Visions.
Thanks, Grace. Great to be here.
So tell us a little bit, how did you get started in a career as a travel journalist?
Well, I've been a travel journalist since 1979. My very first story, because I'd been a visual artist beforehand, my very first story was a piece I wrote about my experience working in one of the refugee camps on the Thai-Cambodian border during the Cambodian Civil War. And as a result of that story, I was asked to join the staff of a newspaper in Santa Barbara, the News and Review. And that's sort of where my writing career in general took off. And from there, I started writing for various magazines about my travels, and thus a career was built.
So tonight we're talking a little about ethical travel. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is, what that means?
Sure. I mean, it's nothing deeply philosophical. Ethical travel is simply mindful traveling. It's travel with a head on your shoulders. You're going to a country. It's a good thing to know in advance, you know, where your money's going in this country. Is it going towards an oppressive regime? Is it going towards great programs? You're staying at a hotel. Was a coral reef destroyed to build that hotel? Was it built sustainably? You're eating at a restaurant. You know, does it employ local people? Is it run by local people? Or is it some sort of foreign, you know, influence corporation? These are things that the mindful traveler sort of knows going into the game and is kind of always aware of, trying to do the best they can for the country that's serving as their host.
And how did you come up with this idea of ethical travel? Where did that start for you?
Well, the real root of it was back in the mid-90s when I read an article about Aung San Suu Kyi, who was then the democratically elected and imprisoned leader of Burma. She asked travelers not to visit Burma while the country was under a military junta, and that really inspired me. I wrote an op-ed for the Washington Post that year suggesting that travelers begin to vote with their wings and basically, you know, not give their revenue to countries that were infringing on human rights and the environment, and spend their money instead in countries that were doing the right thing in terms of, you know, social welfare, human rights, and environmental protection.
And from there, is that when you started ethicaltraveler.org?
No, that actually started in 2003 after a bookstore reading I gave for a collection of my stories called Scratching the Surface. I answered a question in the audience about what travelers could do to help the situation in the world in terms of human rights and environmental protection. And we got into a discussion about travelers voting with their wings. And after that reading, a number of us got together, myself and some of the people who'd been in the audience, and we decided to create this organization.
And so every year, Ethical Traveler comes up with its top 10 destinations for the ethical traveler, somebody who's concerned or wants to be a mindful traveler, as you said. Can you tell us this year, 2018, what are the destinations on your list?
Sure, I'll tell you the destinations, but I first want to just clarify that all of our countries that we choose are chosen from the developing world. You won't find a country like France or Australia on the list, or New Zealand. The reason for this, just really briefly, is that we're trying to pick countries where a growing tourism economy is really important, so that they'll be inspired by the list and really, you know, stay the course of doing the right thing. Everyone thinks that we have a favorite country. We don't. Our countries are listed in no particular order. All 10 of them are doing great things. And the ones that got on the list this year are Belize, Benin in Africa, Chile, Colombia, and Costa Rica, Mongolia, the islands of Palau, St. Kitts and Nevis, Uruguay, and Vanuatu.
Wow, those seem like pretty exotic places to travel to.
They're not only exotic, but they all have just great infrastructures for travel and tourism, and are really a lot of fun, and they've all done great things, not just during the past year, because that's really not enough, but they're sort of continuing. They're keeping promises they made in terms of protecting their reefs and forests, and in terms of promoting human rights, and especially, you know, we really look at things like LGBT rights, we look at animal rights, and we look at the rights of women and children, which are often really repressed in the developing world.
So let's dive into that. What are the criteria for your organization to be an ethical destination?
Well, we start with a whole team of people in the late summer, and we go through the list. There's three separate lists of developing nations that we use. Then we take all the countries on those lists, and we look at how they're doing from a whole bunch of different sources. Freedom House, the Millennium Challenge Corporation, UNICEF, Reporters Without Borders, the World Bank, local LGBT sources, and then we come up with about 25 shortlist countries. Then we start in with detailed case research, whittle it down to about 15, and then we just look at the actions these governments have taken during the past year to improve or, of course, do away with policies and practices in their countries that are either really good or really repressive. If they promise to preserve a forest, we make sure that they're actually making that happen and policing it, making sure it's enforceable. If they promise to stop shark finning or allowing ships that catch sharks in their waters, we make sure they follow through on that. If they said they're going to start providing better education for children or better medical facilities, we make sure that they've done that. A country saying it's going to do something is not good enough. They've got to actually follow through, and then if they want to stay on the list, they have to continue in that course through the following years.
Some of the criteria that you just briefly spoke about include animal rights. Tell me a little bit about why that's included and what it means for a country to have excellent records on animal rights.
Well, I can't remember who said it, if it was Mark Twain or Gandhi, that you can really tell how civilized a society is by how they treat their animals. Our members really wanted us to include that criteria. It's a very difficult one to gauge because we're really, in some ways, putting our Western developed world values on the developing world. We look for countries that are not deliberately engaging in cruelty to animals. Some countries like Namibia, for example, have great environmental policies, but they allow a gigantic seal cull there each year where tens of thousands of baby seals are slaughtered, and that has definitely kept them off the list. A country like Mauritius in Africa, which has been on the list several times, is also a supplier of laboratory monkeys to most of the medical industry around the world. And there have been some questions about the ethics of how they treat those primates when they're caught. I'm not hypocritical. I use the vaccines that these animals are used to test for. I just want to make sure, we want to make sure, Ethical Traveler wants to make sure, that when the animals are caught or captured and shipped, they're treated as ethically and humanely as possible. So we look at things like that. It's actually true that some countries in the world right now, and I'm sorry, Grace, I just can't name them off the top of my head, actually give rights to animals in their constitutions. I think Costa Rica is one of them. And that's something that, of course, is really very advanced and evolved, in our opinion, and we hope it's a trend that continues.
And also included in your list are human rights, social welfare, and particularly rights of LGBTQ community members. How do you evaluate if a country is doing well on those criteria or less well?
Well, it's a matter of record which countries have draconian laws against that community. We are not an LGBTQ organization, but we're very concerned with human rights of all kinds and the rights of all people to live and love as they wish. It's very easy to look online. There's some great LGBTQ websites and to see, what the policies are in different countries. There are what we call deal breakers. if a country has laws against you know, this kind of lifestyle that are not enforced or haven't been enforced for years and years, we generally give them a pass. There are sometimes political reasons for that. But if they have draconian laws or if they've been enforcing laws and imprisoning, you know, gay people, that's a deal breaker. They won't get on our list.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just say one more thing, Grace. I'm sorry. When the time comes to choose from our short list, mm-hmm. we actually call up and speak to the LGBTQ organizations in that country and ask them if they feel their country deserves to be on the list.
It seems like a very in-depth process. And who's putting the lists together? Is it members of the Ethical Traveler staff, or do you go beyond that?
We have two women, Natalie Lefebvre, who lives in Belgium, and Karen Charmaine Blansfield, who direct the project. I oversee it at a bit of a distance and then write the introduction, the report is done. And then we accept volunteer researchers who have a background in either journalism or sociology or anthropology or politics, and they work with us for several months in evaluating these countries. And I just want to say to your listeners, if anyone's interested in helping us for the 2019 list, which we're going to start to research, just drop us a line at jeff@ethicaltraveler.org.
That sounds like a very appealing way to spend your time to figure out which is the next place to travel to. Of this year's list, are there countries that have appeared more than once?
Yes, there actually are. There's, in fact, six of the countries on the list appeared last year. And, you know, in a way, it makes the list a little repetitive. In another way, it's great to know that there are some countries that are just continuing to keep up the good fight and do more and more things that are protective. Belize, Costa Rica, Mongolia, Uruguay, and Vanuatu all appeared on the 2017 list as well. And they're all just doing wonderful things and really progressing in a way that I sort of wish our country was progressing at this point.
I think there are a lot of people who would agree with you on that. Well, I noticed that on your list, Benin is the only country from the African continent, and I was curious as to why there weren't more African nations.
Yes, that's true, and Mongolia is the only one from the Asian continent. The continent of Africa and the continent of Asia are full of countries that are pretty rife with corruption and human rights abuses. Either that or, you know, there's many developed countries as well in Asia, for example. We would love to include more Asian countries on the list. We would love to include more African countries on the list. But in all of the countries in Africa except Benin at this point, there were deal breakers. You know, we looked at Ghana. We look at South Africa, which has been on the list several times. We really try to include these countries. But at a certain point, if it's between a country like Chile and a country like Ghana, there's just no question that Chile, you know, has to be on the list.
Well, what's a deal breaker for a country like Ghana? Is it its environmental record or human rights record?
Sometimes it comes back to domestic abuse and the way women are treated at home, laws mm-hmm. protecting women in a domestic situation. Sometimes it really is the LGBTQ situation. I didn't do the research on Ghana this year. I know it was up for the list. I don't know why Natalie and Karen and the researchers finally ruled it out. But I've learned over more than 10 years of doing the list to trust their judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone's specifically interested about why a specific country is not on the list, they can drop a line to info@ethicaltraveler.org, and we'll do our best to answer their question.
Yeah. And tell me a little bit about Benin for our listeners who maybe don't know where it is exactly and don't know anything about it.
It's famous for its colorful festivals. It's got wonderful food. It's got great music. And some really fascinating architecture. There's an organization called Freedom House, which evaluates democracies around the world, and it is listed by Freedom House as the most stable democracy in sub-Saharan Africa. It has the highest score of any country on their political rights index. Last year, in 2017, they abolished the death penalty, and they're now they're basically making their trees traceable, that the deforestation problem is being dealt with. All of the country's teak plantations are now trackable, so if you cut illegally in Benin, you can be tracked and caught. And these are all just wonderful wonderful things for Benin to have done. You know, it's a small country. It's right sort of at the bottom part of that round part of Africa that juts out towards South America. And for a tiny country that's, you know, even half the size of Uruguay, they've made tremendous strides. And it's a great place to visit.
It sounds amazing. I did not know anything about that. And tell me a little bit about the one Asian country on your list is Mongolia. And I think people probably heard about it, but what makes Mongolia such an appealing destination?
Well, it's incredibly beautiful, especially for people who love horsemanship. Absolutely gorgeous terrain, a lot of nomadic cultures that are absolutely fascinating. People think of Mongolia, they might think of Genghis Khan or that whole world. Very few people would probably be aware that the new criminal codes in Mongolia provide people from discrimination on the basis of gender identity or sexual orientation. You know, very advanced. They have a new fund that's going to basically finance projects and programs that are stimulating, you know, green growth and forestation and environmental protection. And they're trying to turn their national policies, much like Costa Rica has, to line up with green economy principles. And very, very seriously, they're taking very seriously the Paris Agreement on climate change.
Wow. And if we wanted to visit any one of these countries, is there a particular place or places that you recommend to visit? I mean, Mongolia is such a massive country.
Well, there are wonderful treks that are offered in Mongolia, and you know, a lot of very ecologically savvy companies run these horse treks, and it's very easy to find them online. We don't provide information about specific trips or opportunities within these countries. A lot of these countries are so small that in a couple of weeks, say in Benin or Belize, you can visit most of the highlights and have a chance to, you know, scuba dive and visit the rainforest in Belize, for example. But in these days of the information economy, it's very easy to find extremely inexpensive, ethical, and fascinating trips through a place like Mongolia or Colombia or Uruguay.
So I know you don't recommend particular travel operators, but if I'm trying to go to one of these countries on your list and I've never traveled before, how do I figure out what's an ethical way to travel to and within that country? What things should I look out for with travel operators?
Definitely, you know, ask them how much of their staff is local. Ask them where they put you in terms of the hotels. You can do a little research and see if the hotels are sustainable or if they're green. If they have horses, for instance, in Mongolia, just, you know, ask them, you know, where the horses are kept when they're not riding, how often the horses are taken out. There are things you can do to just sort of keep the operator on their toes. Most of the operators that are still around in a place like Mongolia, the ones that have pretty good reviews on, say, TripAdvisor, are often pretty good operators. You know, you have to look into them a little bit and make sure. But if an operator is still doing business in a place like Mongolia, they probably have some pretty good practices involved. In a place like Belize or Chile, that are more developed and more sort of vacation hotspots, not so much. You have to be a little more careful. You have to really sort of look at the level of sort of accommodation you'll have, look at the restaurants they recommend, and just sort of do some cross-checking with something like, you know, environmental sustainability and, say, wilderness travel. There's a company that will always come up very high on the list of ethical companies. Geo Expeditions, another company that does really great work. There's just many, many companies there, large and small. My own personal preference when I go visit these countries is to find a local operator that has really good local reviews, or to just sort of write to people in the country through Facebook and just ask them, you know, what's a good sustainable travel company in your country?
And why is it important for you to use a local travel operator versus one with an international staff or reputation?
Well, the idea for me when I travel and for the people involved in our organization is always to try to keep the money locally. Let local people benefit. Let the local infrastructure benefit from tourism and travelers. Let people who, you know, want to build open restaurants or run mom-and-pop operations, or local people who want to be dive masters, let them be the ones to get the rewards of travel and tourism. It's their country. Let's keep the money in their country to help build their infrastructure and help, you know, keep them on a path towards sustainability. I mean, I could say so much about this.
It makes a lot of sense. Well, we'll keep the conversation going, but this is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Our guest tonight is Jeff Greenwald, founder of Ethical Traveler, a nonprofit organization in Berkeley that annually puts out a list of the top 10 ethical destinations to visit. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments. Is there a country that you think should be on this list? Do you have a particular insight into what it means to travel ethically? The number to call in to join our conversation is 1-866-798-8255. That's 1-866-798-TALK. Or you can email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on kalw.org or on our Facebook page. Or feel free to send us a tweet at cityvisionskalw. So we're talking to Jeff Greenwald about ethical travel and his tips of how one can travel ethically. There are a lot of Latin American countries on your list, and I noticed that Colombia made the list. And with its recent history of civil war, I think for some listeners they might be surprised to see it on there.
Yeah, well, they've got a peace agreement now with the rebel group FARC, which is very important, and they've quadrupled the number of acres of the country under environmental protection. And just personally, I have so many friends who visited Colombia recently who just come back singing the country's praises in terms of how beautiful it is, how great the people are, how friendly they are, how generous, and of course, again, the rights of the LGBT community have been really advanced in that country, much more progressive than they were 5 or 10 years ago. And Grace, can I just sort of add something in the light of the news that we're looking at today? I think it's kind of important. You know, today was a hard news day with our president sort of traveling, basically in Helsinki and putting his foot in his mouth about Russia. And people always ask us, is it safe to travel as an American at a time where American foreign policy and the presidency are viewed in such a negative light? And our view is that there's never been a more important time to travel, that travel is really the world's greatest form of de facto diplomacy. When you travel, if you can stand up for the things that you believe the United States of America really stands up for, inclusivity, tolerance, just, a melting pot for all kinds of cultures, all of the things, personal freedom, freedom of the press, if you can travel and sort of be a walking example of those kind of values, it can really be much more powerful than what people read in the newspaper about this country. And we do offer a little list for people called the 13 Tips for the Accidental Ambassador, which is on our website. Just type into the search bar 13 Tips, the word 13. And it just gives you things to remember while you travel, sort of really obvious things that'll help you be a better traveler abroad and help you sort of, take abroad the values that you would really like people to think of when they think of this wonderful country of ours.
Well, and your website, Jeff, is www.ethicaltraveler.org. And tell us a little bit about what those tips might be to be a de facto diplomat as you travel.
There are things that everyone knows, but that it never hurts to be reminded of. It never hurts to be reminded of them. One of the most important one is just, of course, be aware of where your money is going and patronize locally owned inns and restaurants and shops. Another one is to bargain fairly with respect for the people who are selling. Remember the economic realities of where you are. A transaction should leave both the buyer and the seller satisfied and pleased. Nobody wants to feel exploited or ripped off. Learn and respect the traditions and taboos of the country you're visiting. Curb your anger and cultivate your sense of humor. And really, if you can, if you've got even 2 hours before you get on the airplane to go someplace, do an internet search and try to arrive in your country with a sense of the social, political, and environmental issues that the people there are facing. And it might really change the way you behave and the kind of places that you stay. But the most important tip on the list, and I think it's something that we'll all recognize as one of the most important things, is to learn how to listen. When you go to a country, especially in the developing world, there's this sort of prevailing attitude that Americans don't know how to listen. We sort of pontificate about the way we think the world should be, and everyone else can sort of follow us or go to hell. And just don't don't lecture. Just listen to what people have to say. Listen to their concerns. Listen to what their concerns about our country is. You don't have to defend America, and you don't have to argue against it. Just listen. And sometimes just listening makes a tremendous impact on the people in the host country you're visiting. And then you'll get home and you'll tell people what they said, and then that sort of sensibility will spread around. Because the thing I found that really amazes me is that people in the developing world especially really feel that when they have the ear of an American, they have the ear of America. And with all our blogging and posting and tweeting and Facebook and Instagram, it's really true. You know, one or two great encounters in another country spread through our social media can have a tremendous impact on the way people see, you know, a country like Cuba or Israel or China, you know, or India, that we might, you know, have sort of cliched views of otherwise.
Advice to live by. How about voluntourism? I think that's a big trend out there, is to travel abroad, maybe to a developing nation, and offer some kind of volunteer services to the country that you're visiting. Is that a good way to travel ethically?
Well, ethical traveler doesn't really support a lot of voluntourism efforts. If you want to go volunteer with an organization that's doing work with animals or research, dolphins or gorillas in Congo or tracking birds or raptors someplace, that's all well and good. That's wonderful. Just go spend a couple of weeks in the jungle or on a coral reef tracking animals and letting your data be part of the baseline research. But to travel into a country like in Africa or Cambodia for a week and work at a school and then leave, and then the next voluntourist comes in and they stay a week, and the next voluntourist comes in and stays a week, this is really a false sense of relationship with the country. And the people you're working with there, the adults and the kids, really, you know, you can't pretend that you've really developed a relationship when it's a revolving door situation like that. So if you want to volunteer somewhere, if you want to go someplace and work, I would say a minimum of 3 months would be the amount of time you'd want to spend there. And this is sort of very different than what a lot of volunteerism organizations offer, but it's the only way to really get your foot in the country and develop real and lasting relationships with the people you're working with.
So do you feel that volunteer tourism is a less authentic way to visit a country, or is it that you're not doing enough good?
I can't speak for every volunteerism effort that's out there, and I'm sure that some of the listeners of this show have done volunteerism programs and been very moved and affected by them. I don't want to make a blanket condemnation of the practice. From what I've seen of volunteerism, there's a kind of revolving door mentality that, you know, there's this whole joke that, you know, some schools in Africa have been painted like 43 times by different volunteerist groups. Mm. I mean, a lot of the volunteerism programs out there are kind of scammy, and they make a lot of money for the organization that runs them, and the people who go on them come away with a false sense of having really done some good, but in reality they've just had a sort of a shallow dip into the culture and into the lifestyle of the country.
Well, if I only have 1 or 2 weeks to visit a country, how can I make authentic connections?
You can go to authentic places where local people make connections. Go to local cafes. Go to dances. It's not something I would necessarily do. But pursue your own personal interest in the country that you're visiting. I have a friend, my friend Dwayne Newton, a retired firefighter from the San Francisco Fire Department. He always visits the firehouses in the country he visits. He always drops in and says hello to the firefighters, finds out what their lives are like. That's a really interesting way to make connections. I try to meet the journalists. Usually I'm on assignment, so I have a reason, you know, to meet a certain kind of person in a country. But you can make an authentic connection even with, you know, with anyone, with the waiter at your restaurant, with somebody who's working in your hotel, if you're willing to just sit down and talk to them and take an interest in their life. And for every one person you meet, You can expand that out, and you'll meet their network of friends or family. I'll never forget when I was in Fiji once. I wanted to go to a kava ceremony. I wanted to go to an authentic one, and there were all these kava ceremonies that were advertised, and I realized they were all super commercial at the big hotels. So I just went up to the what are they called in the hotel, the person who takes your bag?
The bellman,
The bellman in the hotel. Mm-hmm. And I said, where could I find a kava ceremony with local people? And he said, I'm having one at my house this weekend. Why don't you join us? And, you know, unless you ask, you'll never know. And I went to his house that weekend. There were about 15 Fijians there. We sat in a circle and drank kava from the bowl. We had a hilarious time. It was absolutely fabulous. And, you know, I kept corresponding with those people for many months afterwards. It was really a wonderful connection, and it just made me fall in love with Fiji all the more.
We'll have to find a little bit more about that. But this is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Our guest tonight is Jeff Greenwald, founder of Ethical Traveler, a nonprofit organization in Berkeley that annually puts out a list of the top 10 ethical destinations to visit. Please call in with your questions or comments. Is there a country you think should be on the list? Do you have a particular insight into how one can travel ethically? The number to call in to join our conversation is 1-866-798-8255. That's 1-866-798-TALK. Or you can email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on our website, kalw.org. So we were talking about your intrepid travels through Fiji before the break. And I was curious to learn that although many people out in the United States travel outside the country and tourism abroad was up by 10% over last year, that only about 28% of the American population actually travels outside the United States. What do you think about that, and how can we encourage people to go outside our borders?
Well, there's so many wonderful things to see inside our borders that, I mean, I think as long as people are traveling, they don't necessarily have to go outside our borders. I think for a lot of Americans, just traveling to places, you know, even in the Bay Area, outside of our bubble here, is a real awakening and a real shock to what they believe America is like in both positive and negative ways. I think that, of course, I don't know where you're getting that statistic. Maybe it's a question of how many people actually have passports. You know, I think that people who travel abroad for the first time usually go to places in the developed world that they've always dreamed of visiting, like France or Italy, India, Thailand, you know, Costa Rica. To get people to travel to foreign countries is not enough. It's a question of really getting them to engage with a foreign country, to do more than just go to the postcard sites on their list, to actually take the time to do what we were talking about before, to talk to local people, to have an authentic experience. That word sort of sounds so false right now, but it really is the only word to describe, you know, what it's like to really be in a local bookstore or cafe and just run into a local person and have a conversation with them about something you never thought you'd be talking about. And it's so easy, and all it takes is kind of stepping out of that little shell that we're accustomed to as North Americans, and kind of letting ourselves be influenced and open to the rest of the world. People are generally inspired to travel by listening to what their friends have to say about traveling, and I think that you know, Anthony Bourdain was also a great influence on people in terms of getting them out to experience and well, taste, literally taste the rest of the world. People who can tell good stories about their travels are really wonderful diplomats in terms of getting people out there and getting people to get passports and travel through the world. You know, we had this funny conversation when we talked last week, Grace, in our little pre-interview about about people in other parts of the world, you know, people asking them, where are you from? And the difference, you know, if they say, I'm from America, people just sort of back away a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But to start a good conversation, you know, you could just say, I'm from San Francisco, or in my case, I'm from Oakland. And everybody, you know, around the world knows somebody in almost every American city. So, you know, while somebody might be a little put off by the fact that, say, you're an American, they'll be delighted by the fact that you're from Chicago or
right.
Baton Rouge or New York City or San Francisco. You know, everyone has a cousin who went to college, you know, in Denver, or somebody else who, you know, is now working as a software engineer in Houston. And that's a great way to make connections, is to, you know, share where you're actually from. And if you're traveling in the developing world, if you're trekking or going out into the rainforest, bring postcards of where you live. Just go to a souvenir store and buy some postcards of, say, San Francisco or you know, or Austin or New York City or wherever you might be from, to show people what your city is like. People are fascinated by that, especially people who work as guides, you know, in the Costa Rican, you know, national parks or places in, you know, in more remote parts of China. They're really not exposed to these kinds of images as much as you might think they are.
These are really great tips, Jeff. I think I'm going to be able to travel and vacation better after talking to you. We have a question. Is there ever an argument that tourism is good for countries with, say, poor animal rights records, you know, in that it could bring about an awareness or infuse cash into a poor economy?
Yeah, there's always an argument to be made that, that helping a country, you know, lift itself up economically is good for all citizens of that country, animals included. You know, the rising tide lifts all the boats. I think that animal rights or animal welfare is really more a question of people's upbringing and attitude and just sort of education. We're learning, you know, more than we've ever known before about animals, about the animal mind. We've learned that, that even birds like crows have very very impressive intellect in some ways. And that animals like chimpanzees and orangutans, you know, have brains that are remarkably close to ours. I think if this becomes better known, it really helps. One thing that really helps also, just economically, I'm going to answer the question in terms of a trip I took to Vietnam. You know, people in very rural or remote Vietnam ate a lot of bushmeat, which means they would go into the forest and shoot monkeys or bats or any other kind of mammal they could find, and roast them and eat them up. There are some groups in the United States and abroad, a group in the U.S. based in the Bay Area, for instance, is Seacology, that aims to protect those areas. And what they do is they take the people who are the main hunters or the main predators in that area, and they turn them into guides.
Oh.
They actually give them money to protect the forest and to protect the animals in the forest. And these people quickly learn that it's much more sensible to have a sustainable tourism economy based on their animals than to kill their animals for short-term gain.
Mm.
And I've personally witnessed this happening in places like Vietnam, and it's very impressive. It's a very wonderful thing to see. In Costa Rica as well.
Fascinating. Well, I was curious because your initial op-ed that you wrote for the Washington Post was encouraging people not to go to Burma because of its human rights record. And your list is actually more of a carrot versus a stick. But why not list places where maybe we shouldn't be going or shouldn't use our tourism dollars?
When we started Ethical Traveler back in the early 2000s, 2003, the Internet and the World Wide Web were not nearly as developed as they are right now. I think that people are pretty aware right now of the countries in the world that have egregious human rights records. I mean, in North Korea is certainly one of them. Russia, to some extent, another. Some people would argue that both Cuba and Israel have dismal human rights records, and some people would argue that our country does too. But at Ethical Traveler, we don't believe that there's any country that you shouldn't visit anymore. It all depends on the attitude you bring when you travel. If you're traveling to educate yourself and to learn more about a culture and to interact with the people and find out what their concerns were, their concerns are, to learn about their culture, to try their food, to have a knowledge of the place that you can talk to people about, that's always valuable. Ignorance is never valuable, and awareness always is. So even places like North Korea, there's a value to going there, even though your money does support, you know, perhaps the world's most repressive regime. You will come out of there having borne witness to a certain kind of, you know, human tragedy that you might then be, you know, moved to lobby about or to work towards ending or changing.
Yeah, and in that vein, we have an email from Patrick who says, the idea of voting with your dollars regarding these various issues is quite persuasive, but I'm torn about the idea of avoiding all the countries on the other side of the spectrum rather than traveling widely and bearing witness. Could you talk a little bit about this?
Sure. I mean, there's great value in bearing witness. I mean, there's always also great value in going to countries that are doing wonderful things for human rights and the environment. And there's nothing that says that, you know, over a course of 2 or 3 years, you can't visit Cuba and Costa Rica. You know, you can visit places where there are questionable human rights practices. You can visit places where the money is going to build a completely renewable solar infrastructure. I'm personally going to be leading a trip to Cuba in December, And I have to say that traveling to Cuba has really been one of the most fascinating, educational, and life-changing experiences I've had. You know, just talking to people who fought the revolution, talking to people who have been forced to stay and were not thrilled with the revolution or with the Castro regime. I mean, it's just really amazing. Going to Israel, staying, you know, for a few nights in the occupied territories, I learned more than I could have learned from any newspaper. So, yes, there is a tremendous value to traveling to questionable places, and there's also tremendous value in traveling to places where your money does a lot of good. There's value in traveling, period. It really doesn't matter where you go, as long as you've got an open mind and you're interested in the people you're visiting.
Well, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. My guest tonight is Jeff Greenwald, a travel journalist and founder of Ethical Traveler, a nonprofit organization that annually puts out a list of the top 10 ethical destinations to visit. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments. The number to call in is 1-866-798-8255. That's 1-866-798-TALK. Or you can email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on our Facebook page. And finally, you can reach us on Twitter by using @cityvisionskalw. You mentioned earlier about green economic principles. Could you explain for our listeners what those are?
Yeah, they're basically have to do with all, they're all about sustainability, renewable energy, using locally sourced and renewable building materials, you know, locally grown food and produce. More and more places, oddly, these are some of the most expensive places you can travel, but more and more hotels and lodges around the world are developing these practices because, first of all, they believe in these practices, and also because it's good business. I think more and more people are looking for an experience that doesn't necessarily take a heavy toll on the host country they're visiting.
And when you're visiting a country, I've experienced this myself, and where bargaining maybe is a way in which to purchase items. You talked earlier about completing transactions where both parties feel good. I personally always feel a little reluctant to bargain. Is that something I should get over? Or
yeah. Yes. In some countries,
tell me how.
In some countries like Morocco, for example, or you know, some of the Middle Eastern countries, certainly almost all of the African countries, bargaining is really part of the culture. And, you know, of course, you can always pay the price you're asked, but for one thing, you know, not only will you be ripped off, but you'll set a really bad precedent, because then, you know, they'll know that it's easy for a traveler from the United States to pay that kind of price, and they won't bargain as hard. Bargaining is a real art. Not everyone is good at it. Everyone sort of dreads it. It's not something we do in this country very much. When I had the great privilege of interviewing the late author Paul Bowles at his home in Morocco, I asked him what had attracted him to Morocco, and he said, "I went to the post office to buy some postcard stamps, and they quoted this price to me, and I said, 'That's crazy,' and the postman said, 'Okay, how much will you pay?'" He said the thought of a country where you could bargain in the post office was so seductive to him that he had to move there. Paul Bowles was a man who loved to bargain. I'm quite the opposite. I tend to just sort of make a furtive attempt to bargain and then give up rather quickly. But bargaining can be fun. You know, the thing is, once you start to bargain, there's sort of this idea that you actually want what you're bargaining for.
Yes.
And it really inflames the person who's selling, for instance, the carpet, you know, to really be very aggressive in their sales techniques. And you can often get things for very, very cheaply if you bargain well. But it's one thing to bargain in the bazaars of Marrakesh or Fez, and another thing to bargain out on the trekking trail in a place like Nepal or Peru, where, you know, where somebody says an egg is going to cost you the equivalent of a dollar, and you say, "That's crazy, I'll never pay that much," and they bargain down. You know, sometimes when you're traveling in the developing world, there are things like eggs that are scarce, that are being saved for children who really don't need the protein, but the temptation to sell them at a high price to a foreigner is too much to resist. Mm. So you've got to be careful in some of these situations where you're sort of taking things away from people as opposed to just bargaining fairly and ethically.
That is good to know. We have a listener on the line, Brenda from Los Gatos. Do you have a question?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Brenda.
Hold on one second. We're just having some slight technical difficulties.
Are we okay?
Yeah. Brenda from Los Gatos.
Hi. Hi. So I visited the Soviet Union in 1971 as an exchange student. And in those days, there was a lot of upswell among the youth to think about communism and socialism as a great thing. Well, visiting the Soviet Union for 6 months completely opened my eyes to what totalitarianism looks like. And I just wanted to share that and the value of that and how much I cherished those days.
Oh, thank you for the call. We had lost Jeff for a second. So Brenda was talking about visiting the Soviet Union in 1971 and seeing a totalitarian regime up front and personal. Brenda, are you still there? I think we've lost her. Jeff, are you there?
We've lost our first caller.
Well, Brenda had called to say that she had visited the Soviet Union in 1971, and seeing a totalitarian regime up close really changed how she saw the country, and she wanted to share that. What do you think about visiting countries that have really poor human rights records, like North Korea? Is that something to consider when there are other more positive places to visit?
It depends what you're interested in. Some people are fascinated by the idea of visiting a totalitarian regime because they've never experienced or seen one before. They'll be subject to the regime. They have to be aware that their money is going to advance and prop up the regime. But they may feel that in balance, it's worth it for the education they'll receive. Mm-hmm. So this is a personal choice.
Yeah. And when you, I wanted to go back to your list for a little bit for our listeners. The destinations on your list, could you repeat those again so listeners can be aware of them?
Sure, absolutely. In alphabetical order?
Yeah, sure.
Not in order of merit?
Well, I think alphabetical makes sense.
Yeah, especially when there's 10 that are equally wonderful. Belize, Benin, Chile, Colombia, Costa Rica, Mongolia, Palau, St. Kitts and Nevis, which is one country, Uruguay, and Vanuatu.
We didn't talk about Palau or Vanuatu. I think those sound to me like some of the more exotic of the places. Tell me a little bit about each of those countries.
Well, Palau is one of the four countries on the list that I personally actually have visited, and they have also been extremely responsive to being on the list. You know, their ambassador has come to the award ceremony a few times. They ask what they can do to stay on the list, and they're very, very keen to protect their marine life, which is their great, great treasure. Palau is a fascinating country. It's much more than a scuba diving paradise. They have an amazing matriarchal sort of society where the women are the people who are in charge. And the more you sort of dive into the local culture in Palau, the more fascinating it is. 80% of their territorial waters are now a national marine sanctuary, and the conservation of their environment is absolutely their top priority, and as much money from that as possible is being rolled over to benefit the local communities that are serving that travel and tourism market.
And to help our listeners to orient themselves, where in the world is Palau?
You'd have to sort of fly to Guam first, or fly to Australia, and then you fly from there to Guam, which is in the South Pacific, Micronesia. You know, the Micronesia,
yeah,
or Melanesia area. The same for Vanuatu. It's in the same area of the world. That they've just called for a ban on the use of plastic bags and bottles. And if any of our listeners have ever been to a beach in one of these developing countries and seen it just littered with plastic drinking bottles and plastic bags, they'll realize how important that is.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing a new childhood education program for years 7 through 10 for free childhood education, and they're just really working hard to protect their forests. There's the World Environmental Performance Index on this kind of protection. They are second place on that list.
Wow.
Which is pretty amazing for a tiny little island country that was recently, not too long ago, devastated by a hurricane. Typhoon.
Well, we have a question from an email from Howard. It says, Jeff, you organized several trips with Ethical Traveler. Which is the next one coming up, and what is the best thing about it, and what will be the most challenging?
There are two trips coming up that I'm leading. One of them is to Nepal, which is going to be from November 12th to 21st, and that's for the Himalayan Writers Workshop. If you go himalayanwritersworkshop.org, you can learn about that. And that's basically for people who want to do writing and photography and be introduced in a very deep and authentic way to the culture and festivals and food and people of the Kathmandu Valley. And we're just putting together a trip for this December, which will go, I think, mainly to the eastern part of Peru, Baracoa, the areas of Peru that are not necessarily close to Havana and that are a little less touristed. The hardest part about these trips is just always getting people together to take them. It's always a challenge. Being on the trip is always tremendous fun. Everybody feels that they're life-changing experiences, and no one ever regrets going on them. You know, there's sometimes someone in the group who's a little bit used to a little bit higher standard than the ethical traveler trips. We have a pretty high standard, but we don't stay in five-star hotels. We stay in locally owned and run hotels, which are very nice and comfortable, but you're not going to have necessarily fancy chocolate on your pillow at night.
Well, I think sometimes for tourists, people who are thinking about traveling outside the country, the cost seems intimidating. It feels like it might be so expensive to travel abroad. What are some tips that you have to make it an economical journey as well as an ethical one?
Well, there's a lot of great websites now, of course, that offer discounted airplane fares. So you can look at some of those. You might know better than I what some of those sites are. And then when you get to a country, I think if you book your trip locally, if you want to do a tour, if you book it through a local company rather than a company based in the United States or the UK, you'll generally find it's about one-third the price. Mm. But you do have to do some research and make sure that people have enjoyed those trips, that they're well taken care of, and that if anything goes wrong, there's responsibility, that there's a way that they can take care of you. You don't want to go on a kayaking trip in a place like Cambodia if there's no insurance, and if you're just sort of on your own, if you get lost at sea or if the kayak tips you over and you hit your head on a rock or something.
Yeah, that does not sound good. That does not sound like a fun vacation at all. These are very good tips. Do you have resources, Jeff, that you recommend that people look at when they're booking travel abroad, especially to developing countries?
I would just say put your question in a search engine and then go through the answers. I mean, there's so many. If you just put in budget trips to the Galapagos, mm-hmm. You will find pages and pages and pages of local operators who are doing those trips, and you can find their ratings. I mean, to recommend just a few specific places would be unfair. There's so many places I don't know about. At Ethical Traveler, we're always getting emails from small companies in places like Kenya or Senegal, or Brazil, from people who are starting alternative ecotourism companies who are running trips and who, really want us to promote what they're doing. We don't do that on our site because we don't have the capability to really investigate what they're doing or how well they're doing it. But there is a big movement out there of young people in these countries starting programs, starting hotels, starting tour operating companies based on really good values, and it's not hard to find.
Well, we have a question online too, a listener. Mark, are you there?
Yes.
What's your question? Welcome.
Okay. So I've done a lot of traveling, and I hope I do it ethically. And one of the questions I have is, it's not really a question, I want to hear your comment on it. It has to do with giving money away. So I like to give money away in a lot of countries. For example, I go to Mexico three or four times a year, to Mexico City and then many of the outlying villages and elsewhere. And when I see disabled or old people, I like to give money away. But I also see exploitation begging, like little kids in Mexico City who are performing and singing. And it's obvious they're just being exploited by their kids, by their families, or even by, unsavory characters. And in China, I was just in China, and I saw some pretty desperate situations there. So the whole idea of giving away money while you're traveling does present some ethical questions, and I'm wondering what your guest would think of that practice.
Mark, that's a great question. I've done a lot of writing on that personally, having spent a lot of time in Nepal. And I think the first rule of thumb that every traveler should know is never give money directly to children. Only give it to their parents or teachers. And when you give gifts to a local community, whether it be school books or balloons or pens or Tylenol, first find out what's really needed and who can best distribute these items. When you get into a situation where you find someone who's very badly disabled, or a blind person begging, or a holy person begging in a place like, you know, like Nepal or India, it's a personal choice of whether you want to give this person money. But it's really most useful to go into a community, talk to somebody at the local church, talk to somebody at the local school, and say, what do you need? And try to actually give them those items rather than necessarily just hand money to somebody. Because it's very difficult to know where that money is going to end up when you put it in someone's hand. But this is definitely a very important thing for travelers to be aware of. I think on the Ethical Traveler website, there's an article called Begging the Question, in which I address a lot of this in more detail. You might want to take a look at that, Mark. But, you know, just basically, I would say avoid giving gifts or money directly to children and just try to find out where your money is needed before you just go giving it away.
Thanks for your question, Mark. That was a great question.
Not at all. Thanks for the program.
Yeah, you're welcome. In our last few minutes that we have, Jeff, what's on your bucket list?
Well, let's see. My bucket list, there's two places I've loved to be that I've never traveled. I've never been to South or Southeast Africa, where they have the running herds of animals and lions and wildebeest. And I would love to experience that at some point. And luckily, there's a lot of good local operators there that I can choose from. And I've never seen any place with calving glaciers. Oh. I would love to have that experience, whether in Antarctica, which is, of course, very difficult to reach, or maybe just up in Alaska, because I love traveling through the United States of America. One thing I would like to add, now that I've told you my bucket list, is I just want you have a link to it on the program for this show. But I just want to let the listeners know that there is an Ethical Traveler podcast, which is really a lot of fun. And also to tell your listeners, you know, give a listen to the podcast, and if you have a 3-minute travel story you'd like to share, let me know, and we'll see about recording it. Again, it's jeff@ethicaltraveler.org, and we begin every podcast with an original story about travel.
It is a really great podcast. That's at www.ethicaltraveler.org, and you can find a link to it on our website at wwkalw.org. So, and finally, do you have any we know what the list of the 10 most ethical places are, but are there some honorable mentions that we should put out there for our listeners?
Yes, I think Ghana definitely should be a place that people should consider going and experiencing. Almost anywhere in Africa is a really fascinating place to visit. Kenya, of course, very, very beautiful country, a place I would like to go to myself. Let's see, in South America, there are many parts of Brazil with wonderful environmental programs that are fascinating. I've been to Guyana, and they're trying to build up a local tourism economy there among the Amerindians, who are turning their villages into places with little resorts and hotels. These are people who 10 years ago did not know what the word tourism meant, and now they are becoming the sort of owners and directors of their little lodges. That was a fascinating trip.
That's great. Well, Jeff, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you, and we'll have to leave it there. That's City Visions for this evening. Our guest tonight was noted travel writer and founder of Ethical Traveler, Jeff Greenwald. You can read more about the organization's work on its website, ethicaltraveler.org, or take a listen to its podcast, also on that website. Thank you, Jeff, for joining me. For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page on kalw.org. Our engineer this evening was David LaTulipe. Tonight's show was produced by Susie Britton. Join us next week on City Visions, and thank you for listening. Good night, and have a great week.
Your old car has been good to you, we hope, and now it can do even good for others who value local public radio. Donate your vehicle to KALW, and we'll put the funds toward the independent, innovative programming you value. See if your car qualifies by calling our vehicle donation line at 888-KALW-CAR. KLW is supported by the Cabrillo Festival of Contemporary Music, 2 weeks in August celebrating the here and now of new music for orchestra. Maestro Christy Macalara leads the 56th festival season with a premiere filled program of works by John Corigliano, Anna Klein, William Bolcom, Wang Ru, and others, all in downtown Santa Cruz. Tickets at cabrillomusic.org.